The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Let's pick it up for hour number three of the Jimmy Sengenberger Show here on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS. Thanks for joining us, and my thanks to Paul Ballinger for coming in studio. He is one of two thus far announced candidates to unseat Tay Anderson, who, of course, I mean, make no bones about it, he's got to go. Without a doubt. And there are plenty of reasons for why Tay Anderson needs to go. But here's the important thing to keep in mind. This isn't just about unseating Anderson. When you have two or three candidates running against him, then it's also how do you determine which candidate to support instead or to replace Tay Anderson? Did Paul Ballinger make a good first impression to you, given his security and military and leadership background that he's really leaning in on at this moment where school safety is the crucial issue? 303-696-1971, our telephone number. What did you make of our hour with Paul Ballinger? Next week, we will be joined in studio by Kwame Spearman, who's a candidate who announced a few weeks back, two or three weeks ago, that he is running against Tay Anderson. And of course, he is the former CEO of Tattered Cover and ran for mayor of Denver until he withdrew and supported Kelly Bruff for mayor. It'll be interesting to have him in the studio, and then you can see week to week the contrast. And then there is one other gentleman who is publicly talking about running for the school board at boardhawk.org. There was a piece by John Youngquist, former principal of East High School, among other elements of education in his background. He had a piece entitled, "Why I Am Considering a Run for Denver School Board." I have heard his name bandied about as a likely candidate for a few months now. And it looks like he will throw his hat in the ring. Like, this is an indication. You don't normally see a piece saying, "Why I'm considering a run," if you're not going to get in the fight. So I expect that there will be three candidates against Tay Anderson. I hope that's where you stop. It would be nice to stop three, because you don't want to spread things too thin from a political strategy standpoint. Interestingly enough, Tay Anderson put out a tweet to that effect, which was a rather interesting tweet, especially the last sentence coming from him. But you can go read the tweet yourself if you want to. 303-696-1971, what is your take? First impressions, listener text coming in, a sharp dude, he made a good impression. There you go, talking about Paul Ballinger in this last hour. Here is the thing. Denver Public Schools is failing. You have a dysfunctional school board that can't get it together, can't even cooperate with one another, and set clear missions and objectives and a clear focus, even show a unified front. It was interesting. This week, you had the resignation of Elizabeth Hansen from the Douglas County School Board, and that's over in Dougco, where you have a conservative-leaning majority of four school board members, and then you have another three. Well, you had another three. Now it's down to two, and the majority is a super majority. And they voted on an equity policy that had been introduced by the president of their school board, Mike Peterson. And that equity policy, very interesting, approach to it that I thought was savvy. It was not tearing it up as they had intended to do when elected, but was, let's reach a balance. Let's modify the policy for clarity, such as, I don't know, the definition of diversity, making it so that it's not simply about your immutable characteristics, but also what they call cognitive diversity, which is about the different views that you bring, the perspectives that you bring, which, by the way, are informed by your race, gender, ethnicity, religion, and so forth. They inform your cognitive diversity, or what I have always called intellectual diversity. And it was a very good proposal. And on Tuesday night at their late night board meeting, they went very, very late because they were approving a series of policies that had been introduced by staff and one or two. One, I think this equity policy was introduced by Mike Peterson, and he was involved in another one. But it was mostly staff putting forward policies, I believe. Nevertheless, you had this strong opposition from the three liberal board members, except they didn't really have critiques of the content of this policy proposal. Instead, the critiques were basically about process. In fact, you even had one of the school board members, David Ray, specifically say, and I quote, "I was so close to a yes, but I can't wholeheartedly support this because I'm unable to ignore the flaws and violations of the review process," which, by the way, is an assertion without a basis because they were getting feedback and doing a survey and more for over a year. And then they had a few different meetings to consider this policy change that really is clarifying more than anything else, including adding purposes that were straight from the survey, like maximizing student academic growth and achievement and developing student critical thinking and problem-solving skills that are essential for post-secondary success. Sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Well, perhaps that's why David Ray admits, oh, it's just the process that bugged me, not really the content. And he even said, "I was close because of a lot of the revisions you honored, and I want to say thank you. I could sleep easier knowing those changes were made." And by the way, I think there were 8 changes that he wanted, and 7 of them were approved on Tuesday. I mean, come on. Well, then you had this display from Elizabeth Hansen that was emotional and ripped right out of the Denver Public Schools Board. And I will get to the point on why I'm going from Denver to Douglas County here in a moment, but I want you to hear the resignation of Elizabeth Hansen first.
As a Board of Education, every decision that we make should be grounded in how are we making our district better for our students and for our employees. This board is sadly failing both, and I have made the heart-wrenching decision that I can no longer be a part of it. I am stepping down from my role as a director, effective immediately, because politics and ego are the primary agenda of this board.
Politics and ego are the primary objective of this board, and every decision that we make should be grounded in how we are making our district better for students and employees, and this board is sadly failing at both. Couple of quotes that she said today or on Tuesday in a grandstanding speech. I wrote yesterday in my Denver Gazette column about this being grandstanding in Douglas County schools. And I mean, let's be real. Elizabeth Hansen's public resignation is not emblematic of, and this is a key point, this is why I'm going from DPS to Dougco, and we'll get back to DPS, isn't emblematic of a school district in disarray, which is the narrative from the media and that Hansen wanted to perpetuate, which is this argument that Douglas County Schools is in turmoil. It's in disarray. It is all about that drama. And this resignation just proves it. She knows the playbook. She followed the playbook, and it isn't emblematic of a school district in disarray, but pure virtue signaling by one director. An apparent attempt to martyr herself for a partisan cause. She chose deliberate grandstanding over productive participation. And by the way, her actions could have real world negative repercussions because they want to get, I expect, a bond and mill levy override to fund construction of schools and to ensure that they have funding, adequate funding for the teacher pay measures that they put into place last year. It was unsuccessful in putting forward these bond and tax increase measures. And this year is going to be really hard because of property tax increases that are skyrocketing and because of Proposition HH that would siphon off Tabor refunds under the guise of providing support for property tax increases. Nonsense. But with those two things in place, it's going to be really tough. And it doesn't help seal the deal for funding teachers in schools if you give the false perception of drama and turmoil. Now, how does DPS fit in? Because they are trying to make Dugco, media folks are doing this, trying to make Dugco the mirror image of Denver Public Schools, which is the source of some of the worst dysfunction, not just when it comes to school districts and school boards, but any form of government you will find. It is, you look up the word dysfunction in the dictionary and you see Denver Public Schools Board of Education. And there is a stark contrast between the two, between DPS and Dugco. And I could go on about how there are differences, but the bottom line is that what you have in DPS is a failure and it's not working and there needs to be change. You see it in the parent groups, like the Parent Safety Advocacy Group, PSAG. You see it with Resign DPS. You see it with even the media coverage that finally is stepping up just a little bit, ever so slightly, to criticize not just the board, but also Tay Anderson, who deserves resounding criticism, and they've been shying away from it. And Tay dodges real criticism. He doesn't have to engage in it in any real way. All he will do is just malign critics. I extended an invitation. Don't expect him to accept that invitation. We'll see, though. You never know. But the reality is, I mean, look, there is one exception as far as a willingness to engage publicly with a critical person. I've been resoundingly critical of the DPS board, but Charmaine Lindsay came in studio a few weeks back, when I was filling in for Brockler. And we spent nearly 2 hours with her, she's a school board member, as well as Albertus Simmons, longtime civil rights activist. And we had a fascinating discussion, a meeting of the minds. There were things where we agreed, things where we disagreed. But the point is, she came on and she had that conversation and discussion. And I thought it was a fruitful one. And that's to her credit. Don't know if she's running for re-election or not, but it is to her credit that she was not only willing to do that, but she also was the first one willing to publicly come out via my column on the record, the Denver Gazette, the Friday after the shooting at East High School that resulted in two deans being shot. That she came on the record with me in that column and said, you know what, I support SROs coming back permanently, not just temporarily. Permanently and not just temporarily. However, she did say, of course, and this was a position Paul Ballinger echoed, shared, that it should be school-based decisions. You make your own mind up on whether it should be school-based or district-wide. I think it should be a district-wide decision, but I can understand where they're both coming from. But at least she was willing to say yes and to go on the record and affirmatively note that. So that is to her credit. And also to say we need to pull back on executive sessions. It's one thing I didn't really get into with Paul Ballinger is the executive sessions, the secrecy of this school board. And I think there are multiple board members who are recognizing, you know what, these executive sessions aren't the way to go. And they're responding to criticism, which is, you know, it shows that when you're seeing changes happen, even like that, Because of the public outcry, it shows your voice makes a difference and it matters and you need to speak up. And your parents should have been speaking up for years. When you had 1,000 high school kids walk down to DPS headquarters, they walked out of school and walked out to DPS headquarters on September 20th, I think it was, 2021, calling emphatically for the resignation of Tay Anderson from the school board. You got a tepid response from the board. It was after the censure vote where they had censured Tay Anderson because of the findings in the report on an investigation into improprieties. It was conducted by the investigations law group, and they found that he had coercively tried to date multiple underage teenage girls. And that he had intimidated witnesses during the investigation and other conclusions in that report. And kids called for his resignation. And they got a tepid response from the board saying, they said, this isn't enough, this censure. Now, of course, the board couldn't force Tay Anderson off, but they could have used stronger language. And they did not use that stronger language. They did not say, you need to go and push that. One or two board members, I think, during the censure vote sort of did that. But my point is not to recollect on all that. It's to say it was the kids who spoke out there and the parents were nowhere to be found, all but a few of them. And I will say it was the most remarkable display. I walked from North High School 45 minutes with these students. I was just at North High School to cover a walkout. And we walked over I-70 and we walked 45 minutes. I had to Uber my way back to North High School so that I could get to my car and head home. It was wild, but it was powerful. But the parents weren't there speaking up, so something didn't happen. But now you're seeing parents rising up. You're seeing pushback, and it's important. It makes a difference, and it's valuable. And you got to keep that momentum going into November as far as bringing about change. We'd like to see change. And if you want to see change, then you got to vote, make your voice heard, get involved. 303-696-1971 is our telephone number if you'd like to join in to the festivities. You can also text in on the 710KNUS app on your smartphone. What are your thoughts on Douglas County Schools, Denver Public Schools? We talked about Target earlier. And, of course, our interview with Paul Ballinger in the last hour. 303-696-1971. Let's take a break. You're listening to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710KNUS. Don't you just love when you have a nice train shuffle from harmonica, the great late Paul Butterfield and his blues band bringing us back on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710-KNUS, 303-696-1971, our telephone number, if you'd like to join in to the festivities. Happy to have you along for the ride. You can text in on the 710KNUS app on your smartphone, name and town, if you wish to text in. When we look at what's happening in education, the important thing to keep in mind is the role of the parent. Whether that is in expressing frustration at the board, at district leadership, or what have you, you need to make sure that your voice is heard, but you also need to make sure that parents have the opportunity to put their kid where they realize, conclude for themselves and for their kid is the best place for them to get their education. That means making sure that you affirm school choice and that you affirm the ability to set the right course for a child. No one knows the needs of a child better than his or her parents or parent or guardian. And that needs to be sacrosanct. And that is crucial in addition to issues of school safety. But there is this one piece on the school safety proposal in Denver Public Schools. I will read from the summary of the revised version 2.0 yesterday. put out by the superintendent, Dr. Alex Marrero. The Denver Public Schools student discipline strategy will continue to be rooted in and compliant with federal and state law. And wherever possible, this work is implemented consistently with the district's core values, including students first and equity. In preparation for the 23-24 school year, representatives of DPS leadership will work with the Harvard PELP team to collaborate with other U.S. large urban school districts to build strategies for strengthening student discipline, discipline practices, and engagement. Now, that PELP team is Public Education Leadership Project. Folks, what is this gobbledygook?
To collaborate with other U.S. large urban school districts to build strategies for strengthening student discipline, discipline practices, and engagement.
That sounds to me like you went to a corporation and said, give me some language that I can use that is all corporate gobbledygook speak, but it means nothing. Does that mean anything to you? To build strategies for strengthening student discipline, discipline practices, and engagement? Doesn't that sound like word salad? Doesn't that sound like corporate marketing gobbledygook or edu-speak? There literally is no meat on the bones when it comes to the discipline policy. He is shying away from this, and I hope school board members recognize and will push back and say, no, we need some changes to the discipline matrix. You should be suggesting those as part of this plan, and that's not what is happening here. Going to Harvard and saying, experts from out of state are going to help us shape our policy here on discipline issues. When the whole idea of changing the discipline matrix or addressing SROs in that way supposedly was, well, we have to fit the needs of Denver. And Denver needs something unique to Denver and different. Supposedly that's why, right? It's foolish. Foolish to think about that in that way and to take these steps. To take these steps. And it has undermined safety and the ability to learn. What's interesting is they're saying, let's go work collaboratively with others. When it comes to school resource officers and the agreement between Denver Public Schools and Denver Police Department, literally Cleveland, Chicago, other cities, school districts, major urban school districts, even bigger than Denver, we're using Denver's SRO relationship as a model. And then they threw it out in 2020. The school board threw it out. Led by the likes of Tay Anderson. Said, oh, this is gone. Come on. Then you see the disasters that have come about as a result of that policy. And as they look, they're talking about, okay, well, if we bring SRO, school resource officers back, then we have to have certain conditions, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? The arrangement you had before was used as a model for other school districts around the country. Maybe you should go back to that. And one thing I like that Paul Ballinger said, of course, candidate running against Tay Anderson, one of the couple so far, Ballinger joining me in studio in the last hour. One thing that he made the point of saying that I thought was a very apropos is, well, okay, if we're looking at the discipline matrix, which we need to look at, we kind of have a good model in 2017. What was done before 2021 when they changed this discipline matrix that tied the hands of teachers and administrators in terms of discipline and when they could call law enforcement and so forth. Go back to 2017 with some tweaks. It was tighter. It gave a bit more latitude. It was a much better approach. Why not look at that as a model? You should. But going to Harvard? What do you think about that? Going to Harvard, the experts in the Public Education Leadership Project are going to help us build strategies for strengthening student discipline, discipline practices, and engagement. Strategies! I wish I had this clip from my friends at Morning Sidekick of Technical Studies Institute, where they will begin to prepare to set you on the right course to this and that. It's just all the gobbledygook leading up to what you actually want to get out of an educational experience. Same thing here. Gobbledygook. And that's what you're getting? Really? Come on, man. Come on. 303-696-1971, our telephone number. We did get exclusive audio of a White House meeting on the debt ceiling, just among the Biden folks and his team. And here's a little taste of what they have decided they want to do.
Okay, people, listen up. We're going to set the next debt ceiling at $100 trillion.
Oh, my gosh. Is that what's going to happen? Look, the debt ceiling debate is continuing. There is no deal reached, although Biden had hinted yesterday that they're getting closer to something of the sort. What we are seeing right now, though, is... it's just mind-boggling. It's not surprising. It's not, I guess, more mind-blowing here than mind-boggling to see what's happening in D.C. and how Republicans are simply trying to advocate for a better situation with regards to the debt ceiling and spending and trying to... Look, I appreciate Ken Buck taking his stand in Congress and saying, guess what, I'm voting no on McCarthy's package on the debt ceiling because it doesn't go nearly far enough. We have a massive fiscal crisis, and he's right. But I do get where McCarthy is coming from in saying, look, we got to work a little bit realistically here. Can we at least reduce the growth and spending in the future? And that's what Democrats are resistant to. And, of course, their language about it is just absolute gobbledygook. Take a listen here, and CNN actually pushing back against Representative Premier, I think is her name, Jayapal. And she was trying to dismiss polling that actually supports the Republican position on this.
CNN has a new poll out. I'm sure you've seen it in just the last 2 days. And what it shows, really interestingly, is that 60% of Americans say Congress should only raise the debt ceiling if it comes with spending cuts at the same time. And that includes 58% of independents. Is your position out of step now, Congresswoman, with the majority of the American people?
I'm so glad you raised that poll, because I think it's really important to look at what that poll says. If you just say to people, should we cut spending? They will probably say yes. However, if you say, would you rather cut spending and reduce the deficit by cutting the tax breaks to the wealthiest corporations and wealthiest individuals, or would you like to cut your own health care, education, care for veterans, et cetera, I guarantee you that you would have even higher numbers that say, let's make sure that we're making the wealthy pay their fair share.
That's not
and
what
that's
the
other thing we've been saying to the Republicans.
That's not what the poll says. This is the exact question that was asked of voters. What should Congress do on the debt ceiling? Raise only if spending cut, 60%. Raise no matter what, 24%. Not raise, let U.S. default, 15%. These are what they are saying to this critical question.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I understand. But, Poppy, you can't take tax cuts out of spending.
Yes, you can. And you should. They're two very different things. And, in fact, reducing taxes does help to boost revenue to the government. My friend John Tamney hates that because at Real Clear Markets, as the editor there, he writes frequently about this. He doesn't want more money going to the federal government. So he hates that aspect or that argument from the right. When we say, oh, we'll boost revenues to the federal government, he doesn't like that because it works. But right here, she's talking about a specific policy change that's very different. Right now, when you're talking about the debt ceiling fight, folks are saying, well, we need to cut spending. That's what you're looking at. That's why they're asking cut and dry. Just a clean debt ceiling or doing a debt ceiling increase with spending cuts, over 60% saying yes to that. and 15% saying, you know what, a default's okay as long as we get some spending cuts and so forth. That's what the question is about. That's what the issue is. It is not about tax policy. Now, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, has been frustrated with what's going on here, and she's talking about the real strategy on the right with the debt ceiling.
The fact of the matter is, behind closed doors, they are shaking in their boots. But because they want to cut healthcare, because they want to cut food assistance, because they want to hurt everyday people in order to finance
their services,
but they know that it's not a winner at the ballot box. Mm. They're using the debt ceiling limit in order to hold the entire U.S. economy hostage so that they can say this is something that we did with President Biden.
Oh, that's all it is. Let's just work with President Biden and we want to hurt people. That's the goal. Really? That's the goal. I mean, okay, listen to CNN summarize this.
CNN has a new poll out. I'm sure you've seen it in just the last 2 days. And what it shows, really interestingly, is that 60% of Americans say Congress should only raise the debt ceiling if it comes with spending cuts at the same time. And that includes 58% of independents.
So does that mean that 60% of Americans want to hurt people? Is that the goal? Is that what AOC is saying? That they want to hurt their fellow Americans? Really? Well, but the problem is here in this debate, as Jayapal said in a press conference, it's actually the media that's the problem, not Democrat policy.
But you're willing to tank it if it's not?
They are willing to tank it. No, sorry. That is exactly the problem, is when the media reports this as not their fault. And I'm just going to say, I know so many of you, I have so much respect for what you do, but let's tell the truth here. We are not tanking anything.
Really? The Republicans in the House passed a bill. And only now is Biden talking about, oh, well, maybe we'll get a deal here after resisting it. And Democrats pushing back against even the idea of any sort of future spending. And all we're talking about really is future spending reductions that probably will be undone anyway. So just agree to the damn deal. Just agree to the deal. And one more little snippet of AOC. She makes a point worth responding to here, too.
Contrary to what Kevin McCarthy says, the debt limit is not about raising our limit for future spending. It's about paying for our bills that we've already voted on and already committed to, including what Republicans have already voted for, which also include the Trump tax cuts and the Bush tax extensions.
Oh, my gosh. Still on the whole tax thing. That's what they keep bringing up, even though it's absurd. And it is not the problem that you have a revenue issue in the federal government. The problem is that you have a spending problem. And they don't want to address that. Now, they're right about what she's right about the nature of sort of what the debt ceiling is about. But that doesn't mean that you don't address that kind of thing. So I just wanted to get that in there because I think it is a very important discussion point when you hear them present it in that way. And I haven't heard some of these things being responded to or addressed directly during the week. So wanted to hit on that a little bit here. All right, we got a little train sound as we go to break here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. When we come back, the man, the myth, the legend is here in studio, Peter Boyles with the Peter Boyles Show, as we continue on 710 KNUS. Another one of those harp legends, one of the early ones, Little Walter bringing us back, of course, from Muddy Waters Band. Good to be with you. News Talk 710 KNUS, the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. Real quick, 710 KNUS and the Centennial Institute proud to present the 2023 Western Conservative Summit, June 9th and 10th at the Colorado Convention Center, featuring Lauren Boebert, Eric Metaxas, Ken Buck, Riley Gaines, Frank Gaffney, Tulsi Gabbard, and Missouri Senator Josh Hawley. News Talk 710 KNUS is the official station of the 2023 Western Conservative Summit. Get tickets online at 710knus.com. And I'll be hosting my show live from there 6 to 9. So be sure to stop by and come early. Would love to meet you. Peter Boyle's in the house, back after a live remote last week. How you doing, brother?
You know, really well, thanks. It's good to have everybody up. Yep, turn the mic on. I've promised these guys, and it turned out to be just special with this return of the natives. Joe Williams, radio talk show host extraordinaire, and Sandy Clef will join me at 11. And when Jim Brown died, legendary Cleveland Browns Jim Brown died, I don't think it got enough acclaim who he really was. Joe Williams and Sandy, we'll be all over the boards, but it'll be Joe and Sandy will come in, and I look forward to it, and those guys will be with us at 11. And then, all this talk, these 9/11 calls from Lauren Boebert's home following this incident, and she squeaked an election that she thought she was going to win. She did win it, but it was a squeak. Is she going to be defeated next time? And is that a solid seat? And when these social family upheavals take place, how does it play? And she's been an interesting person to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And now this.
Well, I think that for Colorado in 2024, the two races of note, because we don't have any U.S. Senate race. You got the presidential race, and that's going blue no matter who.
Yeah.
But you've got Boebert's reelection and CDA. Whether that's the one Republicans could pick up potentially,
yeah.
and get a fourth seat, which is necessary to split 50-50. But Boebert's race will be one of the two. That's the one that the Democrats will be eyeing to flip, and they did come close.
I understand that they're just pouring money in, and they want her beaten, and then they hand this thing over, and it's the phone calls and everything that goes with it, and it's like, who is she now? Because she certainly was the darling, and I think she's been what's happened in Congress now is just insanity. I can't follow out any. I mean, I'm one of those guys. I'll read it every day, like you do.
Yeah.
And can you make heads or tails
of anything in politics? Not just in D.C.
Fair enough.
Everywhere.
The debt ceiling.
Yeah.
Can you make heads or tails of that?
I mean, I think that one's a little simple. What they're actually going for, though, is unclear.
Yeah.
You know what the end result will be.
What's the target?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it. And it's a game. And I think that, and also I'm watching DeSantis.
Yeah.
Is he done?
No, absolutely not. He screwed up his opening. It was a botched opener.
Did you watch the Musk thing?
I listened to it. It was not on video. Okay. I listened to some of it.
Right.
And it was not the way to open a campaign. But I do think that there's a reason why Trump has been going after DeSantis in the way he has, because DeSantis does at least pose some bit of a threat. But it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. We got to run.
All right.
But you're up next.
Get him.
9 to noon, Peter Boyle's show. I will be filling in for Deborah Flora on Thursday and Friday of next week, June 1st and 2nd. So be sure to tune in then at 3 p.m. from 3 to 4. That's it for me. God bless America. Thanks in memory to all of those who have served and died. And may God bless America.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.